Does this team, a lot of people reflecting on it, does it seem like a little bit less fun than last year's team to you?
One run, which happened to be a grand slam. He came in with the best of the and gave up a bomb. But
point of order.
I used to be a Stetson man. You remember that theme song?
I wear Gustavo Chassin.
And welcome to episode number 25 of Artificial Turf Wars. Our porch is so short, it won't even fit the chaise lounge. I'm your host, Greg Wisniewski, and I am joined tonight by Joshua Housam. How's it going, Josh?
Good to be back.
Good. Are you done with the tundra and the seal hunt that you were on last week when you were away?
I was protecting the seals. I wasn't hunting them.
No, exactly. So you and Greenpeace taking care of business.
Now, we actually had a little bit of a feud, but the job got done.
Well, that's good to hear. Feuds are the topic of the night, I guess. So we're going to talk about the Jays 5-2 week. We're going to talk about a little back and forth between JD and John Gibbons. Tulo and Martin getting hot at the right time. Ezekiel Carrera returning to the bottom of the order, which, well, we'll talk about the bottom of the order by itself. Jay Happ, Brett Cecil, we have a whack of listener questions. I guess you were listening last week when I complained that there weren't enough listener questions. we're going to try and fit in 2 do-overs and a gold star. And if we have time for anything else, the usual shenanigans around here. So let us start at, instead of 3-3, we have a 5-2 record since the last podcast. I like that.
Yes, 5-2 is good.
It was against Cleveland, who are... No, wait, where the heck am I?
They played the Astros, the Rays, and the Yankees.
I was thinking of the Astros for some reason.
They're playing Cleveland this coming weekend.
Yeah, that's where I'm getting Cleveland from, and I'm an idiot. Yeah, they also... I mean, purportedly, the Astros are a good team. They're not playing like one, but we've been told they're a good team.
They actually were playing really well for a while. They were right up there with the Jays for records since some arbitrary date, like May 23rd or something like that.
I love when people pull that. Like, if you want to pull the first of a month, you know, since the beginning of August, okay, I get it. That's sort of a traditional. But, yeah, I've seen that on Twitter a couple times. Since May 23rd. Since June 18th. Well, what happened on June 18th? Like, is this a significant holiday in your religion? If it is, just let me know, and that's cool. We can go from that day. But otherwise... Pick a normal day.
Yeah. But, I mean, it didn't look so good at the start of that Houston series. They got shut down in the first game, struck out a zillion times. And then in the second game, they were losing 2-1 going into the sixth and looked like the offense was not going to do anything again. And then Martin hit a 3-run homer and then they cruised to victory and then they pumped them in the third game.
And scored 9 runs, which is important. there seems to be a lot of sort of dead time in this Blue Jays offense lately. Not that it doesn't come out okay in the end. They've won more games than they've lost by good measure. But we'll go for 2 or 3 turns through the order, and I'm genuinely thinking, okay, anybody want to get a hit? Like, they lost 1-0 the first game in New York.
It's Chad Green.
Yeah. And Chad Green looked like he was on his way to... a 1 or 2 hitter. It was like, wow. And admittedly, he's got a 95-mile-an-hour fastball. His breaking ball was working. But it just looked like they were beyond lost. Like, they didn't have any ability to hit that fastball at all. And they're supposed to be a fastball-hitting team.
Yeah, there are times that looked very bad. And like you said, like, sometimes it works out. Like today, they were recording this on Wednesday. You know, they scored 7 runs off CC Sabathia, but they struck out 16 times. You know, so when they hit the ball, they seem to do well. It's just they've been having trouble at times actually doing that.
Yeah, and they weren't doing anything in April and May when they were striking out. And now it seems like, well, we're striking out. We haven't really figured out how to curb that tendency. But when we do put the bat on the ball, it's going a lot further. Farther. So interesting stuff that we've noticed during the week. Tulo and Martin are two of those guys. We'll get to JD and Gibbons in a minute. Tulo and Martin are the two guys who've actually gotten hot in the very obvious way. Yeah, Tulo has turned back into Troy Tulowitzki,
which is all kinds of awesome.
Oh, absolutely. I am curious what random thing one will attribute this to if he goes this way for the rest of the season. What they will pick out is that magical point where Tulo remembered he knew how to hit.
I mean, it could just be finally becoming comfortable in the American League and in a new town, new pitchers and all that.
I'm sure that might be the truth of the matter, but someone will come up with something. You know that as well as I do. There'll be a writer somewhere who will come up with some explanation other than, oh, it was time. Martin seems to have changed his approach. They keep talking about it on the broadcast, but he doesn't seem to be swinging out of his heels as much anymore.
I mean, he still does at times, but it's working. But he's doing a lot of more driving the ball to the opposite field. That season in Pittsburgh, when he hit .290, .402, .430, average on base slugging, that's what he was doing. He was driving the ball the opposite field as opposed to trying to pull everything, which is what it looked like he was doing in the beginning of the season. You want your random arbitrary dates since May 25th. The reason I picked that, because that's the day that he hit his first two home runs of the season. Martin's hitting .282 with a .395 on base and .520 slugging.
All right. Sorry, what's that OPS just for fun?
.905.
Because somebody picked the first day that Troy Tulowitzki, this was, I think, Wilner on the radio, the first day that Tulowitzki went, no, he picked the day Tulowitzki went 1-for-4 in a Blue Jays loss or something, and then he said from that date on, he's been OPSing .963.
At least mine was a little less random than that.
Yeah. Pick a day.
Still random, though.
Right after he went 1-for-4, not 0-for? No, after, okay, whatever. I think that you don't need both of those guys over 900. But wow, is it great to have them, because that lengthens this lineup, especially for when we'll go to Josh Donaldson right now. When Josh Donaldson's a little frustrated with his performance, which apparently was today. So a sequence of events would be Josh Donaldson strikes out for the second time in the game.
Yes.
In his second at bat on 3 pitches.
It was not a good plate appearance.
Walks back to the dugout. And fires/heaves his bat down the dugout steps towards the bat rack area in Yankee Stadium, which is right past where John Gibbons is standing on the other side of the railing. So when he gets down to take off his helmet, Gibbons saunters over because never want to be in a rush.
I don't think he's capable.
Yeah, and says things. I do not know what things. And then Josh Donaldson says more things. And then all of a sudden, Josh Tolle and Troy Tulowitzki appear in the frame and migrate between the two men, and suddenly Josh Donaldson's being moved backwards, and that's pretty much the end of what I saw. Did I miss anything?
No, I don't think you did. It seems that you caught everything that the cameras caught, at least.
Now, the post-game comments
were very funny.
Were hilarious. Josh Donaldson alluded to the fact that he had walked back to the dugout, he had thrown his bat and it hit something, and Gibbons came over to him and asked him what kind of cologne he was wearing. And JD told him to back off and he would get him some after the game.
Yeah. And then what about Chulo staying between you two? I think he liked the cologne too.
That's better than the whole dust up right there. Oh,
did you hear what Gibbons said?
No.
So Gibbons goes, I told him after the first at bat, get a new bat. That one ain't working. He took the same one up there the second time. That didn't work. He chose to break it. So I went down and told him, you should have listened to me.
I believe that might actually be the truth. Oh, my goodness. So there's something about a team that doesn't take itself 100% seriously. However, I was going to bring this up and try and fit it in. Does this team, a lot of people reflecting on it, does it seem like a little bit less fun than last year's team to you?
it seems like less fun to watch. I don't know if the team themselves are less fun, but there's not the same. I mean, losing Ben Revere makes a difference. Because that guy was just always smiling and jumping around and looking like he was, you know, on a sugar high.
Well, there's no Ben Revere. There's no Munenori Kawasaki. And regardless of what you think about Munenori Kawasaki as a ball player, he was certainly something you had to keep your eyes on as a show. And there's no...
And David Price.
Yeah, that's the next guy I was going to mention. There's no David Price. So, there's certainly a lot more, from what I can tell by my female Twitter associates... there's a lot more attractive men on the team than there were last year. There's a lot of love for Josh Donaldson, and Michael Saunders and others. I don't really keep track of all of them, but I get a lot more of those sort of tweets as opposed to wow, these guys look like they're having a good time tweets.
Yeah, I mean, you still get some of the latter too, though. I mean, it's just when stuff that's good happens. Like, you know, you get the fun with Osuna and Martin after saves, like knocking on the door and who's there? Oh, it's my buddy. And then you get, you know, Grilly getting all fired up when he strikes someone out to end the inning. Quickly becoming my favorite player, by the way. I love that stuff. And then you get like the dugout celebrations, like Upton after his home run today. It's like he did something with Stroman. It's like, how long have they been waiting to pull that out?
Okay. Yeah. Well, you add a little part each day you don't hit a home run. And then by the time you hit a home run, it's 3 minutes long. So my theory actually has to do with how the season has unfolded, because I don't think any of us really remember what the season felt like on July 15th last year, because it was a 500 team. I think we packed all of the, this might be a very good team excitement into about 7 weeks of baseball. And to go from this team is never going to make head or tail of what it's got to, my God, they might be the best team on the planet right now, is so much more exciting and so much more satisfying. Like, to come back from, what was it, 7 games back of the Yankees?
Yeah.
You don't need to come back if you're nibbling away like they have been at the division lead. They've been basically chasing first place for a month between whoever was in front of them, and just a game here.
Well, I think it's like, you know, for the last 20 some odd days, the Jays have not been either more than or less than a game out of first, or some stupid number like that.
And that isn't, it's tense, but it's not actually exciting. Because it doesn't feel like
fun.
Yeah, there's no fun. There's no momentum to that. So I'm not complaining. I think that has a lot to do with what we perceive. Because there's no big run. There's no rush to see, oh my God, they won 11 in a row. Remember, we'd already had one 11-game winning streak. We were on the second one, or might have just finished the second one this time last year. I don't think the Jays have won more than 5 games in a row this year.
No, I don't think so either.
So that's a big difference. Winning streaks, even on a crappy team, feel really important. Because every night you're thinking, man, could they do one more?
Yeah. I agree with you completely.
Not the same
Jays are like, win one, lose one, win two, lose one, lose two, one, win. You know, it's like, it's
what? And you're looking, they've won 4 of the 5 last series. But that's not exciting. It's just like, okay, it's good.
Yeah, great. It's just good baseball.
Okay. I got that off my chest. We were talking as well. Ezekiel Carrera is back. Is this a big step up from, was it Junior Lake got demoted?
Yeah, he's destined for assignment. I think he's the bigger step up from whoever was going to be playing. It's like, you know, if it's like Daryl Siciliani, who's been really bad. Although he still has to stay in the lineup until Pilar's back. So he gets the update. He's the upgrade from Smoke.
Sort of. Okay, I'll buy that. He's the non-switch hitting Justin Smoke. Yeah.
Yeah, I think he's useful. I mean, the Jays have had a lot of swing and miss at the bottom of the lineup. And a lot of, coming into today's game, they had the lowest on-base percentage ever from the 7-8-9 spots in the history of the team. And that includes the 1977 expansion team that lost 90 some odd games or whatever it was. Actually, I think they lost more than that.
Yeah, they lost 100 and...
Yeah.
Or something. Woof. I think it's a testament to the trouble that the Jays have right now with injuries that they batted their 7, 8, and 9 positions, that is left field, center field, right field, 7, 8, and 9 in the Yankees series for one game.
Who was playing left?
Siciliani.
Oh, yeah. So I guess when Saunders out there and Upton, you could bench Siciliani and put Carrera. That would be at least nice.
There you go. Will this bottom of the order get better? Obviously, it can't get worse.
Well, I think the biggest thing is that, well, I think Upton's going to play better than he has been. I mean, he had a nice game today. The whole bottom of the order played well today, actually. Like, they got between them, well, Upton hit sixth today, so it doesn't really count, but they got six RBIs between them, and they had a day. But I think he's going to play better. I think Carrera's going to be better than Siciliani has been, who's been terrible. And, you know, Pilar, when he comes back, I think that's going to make a difference because, you know, Pilar's say what do you want about the limitations he has as a hitter, and they're, well, we've said a lot.
we've been there.
he does put the ball in play, which, you know, a couple times in this stretch has really cost the Jays runs because their guys just strike out with runners on base.
Fair.
I think...
We know what we're getting with Kevin Pillar, right? He's not going to walk. He's going to swing the bat. And he's going to somehow, like you said, he's going to get the bat on the ball.
Yeah, I mean, and it's one thing if these guys that were not getting the bat on the ball were crushing it when they did. But that's not happening either. So I'll take the guy who hits, you know, a lot of weak pop-ups and stuff, but at least hits the ball.
Yeah, Siciliani, every time we call up a guy who hits nothing, I'm always like, really? Don't we have, like, one guy slashed in AAA who could take a walk or something? You know, hit 250? Anything? No, it never seems to pan out that way. The guys they call up from AAA are inevitably, like, dead meat when they get here.
I was kind of hoping then that Jesus Montero would get called up to bat against Michael Pineda.
Just
didn't happen.
I think your love of the poetic is probably greater than the front office's need to throw games in the.
Hey, Montero's breaking in AAA.
They don't need another DH, Josh.
Oh.
Okay. Somebody was talking about. You were in the conversation about them possibly DFAing Justin Smoke before his extension kicks in.
I was not saying that was going to happen. I was just in the conversation where that was brought up, but yes.
I'm not accusing you of making that observation.
Just making that clear.
that would be quite the move if you found a replacement for Justin Smoke before you'd actually activated the extra contract that you just negotiated for him.
Yeah. That we've talked about that contract. It doesn't make sense, but it would be very funny. Sorry, we are bad DFA.
Yeah, and you can take the money. Yeah, keep the money. Yeah, it was all worth it. Jay Happ is well worth his contract and continuing to roll on. And again, I'm sure if we listen to the Yankees broadcast, they'd still have no idea how Jay Happ is doing this.
Yeah, it's really funny with him that he's done it two completely different ways this season and both equally successfully.
And yet you look at the stuff and you go, it doesn't look that great. Just
he's got the most overpowering 92-mile-an-hour fastball ever.
Yeah, and you're loath to explain exactly how that 92-mile-an-hour fastball and what looks like pretty average secondary stuff continues to work for him.
He just puts in the right spot, I guess.
Apparently.
It's very interesting because I mentioned that, like, the two different ways he's pitching, right? Well, he's getting way more strikeouts now, but he's gone back to, you know, he's exceeded 7 innings once in his last, I don't know, since the last time before today he exceeded 7 innings was May 21st.
He does have, though, the all-important pitcher wins to back him up now.
Yeah, I mean, he's not going super deep in games, but he's getting strikeouts and he's limiting damage. They scored 4 runs today, although one of them scored after he left the game with a runner on first. But yeah, he's 17-3.
And he gave up. I thought that was an interesting observation. CC Sabathia struck out 16. Jay Happ gave up 3 homers. Who do you think won the game?
No, it's not like Jay Happ was giving up. You know, he struck out 9. You know, it's like. And Sabathia struck out 12.
12? Only 12?
Yeah.
Sorry, 12 in 6 innings. Did the Jays strike out 16 times by the end of the game?
Yeah, the Jays strike out 16 times total.
And maybe that's where I'm grabbing the 16 from, which, goodness me. I know they're just outs, but wow.
Yeah. Anyway, back to Hap.
Yeah.
I mean, the Cy Young race right now is wide open. You're hearing ridiculous cases for Zach Britton, who is having the best reliever season ever. Well, sorry, best closer season ever. The best reliever season is not closers. But
Mark Eichhorn.
Yeah, he's in the conversation. But, yeah, I mean, if any conversation has to include Hap, doesn't it? Even if he's not a front runner?
Yeah, I think he gets votes. How can you? He's got a good ERA. He doesn't walk a lot of people, and he's got. Again, I don't think the Cy Young voters are as addicted to the win as they used to be. But if a guy leads his league and wins, unless he does through some fluke like 8 runs of support every time out, he's going to get votes.
Yeah, I think he's going to get serious consideration. Estrada, maybe not so much anymore.
Well, Estrada has 7 starts to figure out whether he's, able to overcome. I still think his back is bugging him.
Yeah, and he's saying that the 6-man rotation has been tougher for him, which I understand that, possibly. I mean, he got shelled his last time out against the Yankees. 5 runs in 4 innings, all on home runs.
There were a lot of Yankee home runs in the series, and it didn't really help them all that much.
No. No, it didn't.
Because the Jays scored 12 times in how many innings?
2. 4?
2 innings. Well, yeah, the scoring was in 2 innings. 2 separate innings. 4, yeah, 4 runs and 8 runs.
Yeah,
that game was strange to watch any of. I had left and I came back just as the Jays tied it up, and I was like, well, this will be interesting. It was barely even interesting. It was just a walk. Unbelievable.
I know, it's like, oh god. And then they score, put up an 8 spot in the 8th. It's like, oh, okay.
Georgia Girardi had nobody.
Yeah, well, Warren had been great, just not yesterday. But I want to go back to the Hap thing. Like I mentioned, that he's not going as deep in games, but it seems to matter less now because the bullpen really has stabilized finally.
Yes.
You guys talked about it a bit last week, but you talked about Ben Juan, him being somewhat shaky. Possibly he's still been very good as a Blue Jay, but I want to talk about Brett Cecil. This is the guy that his ERA was 6.75 on July 20th. It's down to 4.56. His last 9 2/3 innings, he struck out 12, giving up 1 run, which happened to be a grand slam. He came in with the bases loaded and gave up a bomb. But
point of order.
Kendry Morales seems to hit him hard. but he's pitching better. He's getting strikeouts. He's getting that curveball down. And we talked about this before. This team doesn't have a lefty.
No.
And Cecil, if he's pitching like Cecil, that's a huge weapon with the way Grilly and Ozuna are throwing.
Absolutely.
And I kind of have to mention Biagini, too. I mean, he's been on fire.
It's like a major league quality bullpen. Huh. All showed up in August.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm very
hopeful.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I'll take 6 inning Hap striking out guys and giving up 1 run if it means, with this bullpen. I wouldn't take it with the bullpen at the beginning of the season.
When we didn't have it. It would be interesting to know if that's a conscious decision on his part. If he thinks that being more dominant in the early innings is more effective for him overall. Like that he would rather get the strikeouts and hand the ball over now rather than try and limit the contact and get burned occasionally.
Yeah, I doubt that, but it would be interesting if it was the case.
All right, so that has covered our week that was, more or less, which means we get to move on to listener questions.
Yay.
The enthusiasm around here for listener questions. We really do like listener questions, I swear. First question is from Brian A., whose Twitter handle you're probably familiar with, and includes some underscores. So his first question this week, after seeing how well the team had performed without Bautista this season, should we really be that concerned about re-signing him? Josh.
I think you kind of have to separate those two things. The team performance without Bautista has been very good, but it's not been because of the offense. the offense is hit. There have been guys that have played well, but I mean, you might be losing Encarnacion. You might be losing Saunders. You know, it's not going to be the same next year, regardless of whether Bautista is back. But I do think that it's, you know, there might not be as much concern about re-signing him just because of how bad he's looked. I mean, sorry, bad for Bautista. It's kind of a sliding scale there.
How average he's looked.
Yeah. You know, he can't play right field anymore, and he's not hitting as well. So I think if he doesn't really turn it on in the second half when he comes back, I wouldn't be as worried about him walking.
He's not turning it on in the second half, Josh. He'll be turning it on in the final quarter.
Second half of this half.
The second half of the half?
Yeah.
We call that a quarter, just so you know. I think that Bautista's absence highlights the fact that no baseball team really is affected by one guy.
Except the Giants in the early 2000s.
Yeah. That guy couldn't save them most years, though, because, again, you could put him on base every single time, and it still wouldn't necessarily result in championship teams. But, yeah, you really do not have an outlier on this team where it can't survive, any team, that it can't survive a month without its best hitter. Now, you take out its best three hitters or its best three starters or two starters, yes, the effect is multiplied. But one guy does not a baseball team make, and that even if that guy is Jose Bautista at his peak. He can't bring you championships. He didn't in 2010, and he can't keep you out of the playoffs just because he's hurt. Also, no, he's not a $30 million a year player anymore. It's pretty obvious.
Yeah, there's no one going to give him that.
Yeah, not even for 3 years.
No, I'm actually very curious to see what his contract ends up being. It's obviously going to be anything close to what he wanted, but
no.
I mean, is he going to get $25 million a year? 20? I guess it depends on how he finishes.
In this half of a half. Yeah. the Blue Jays fan at the Blue Jays fan asks, who would you put over in a fatal four-way match for the strap, brother? Tell Dead Lily, Shea Hillenbrand, or Josh Donaldson?
That's a tough one. I might have to go with Hillenbrand because he seemed legitimately like a dangerously angry man.
you just went for the generally unstable guy?
Yeah.
Oh, Gibby and Ted Lilly are a little old right now, aren't they?
Yeah, no, they're definitely the handicap. John Donaldson would put up a good fight, though.
Yeah, I think my money's on JD.
I just think Hillenbrand would play dirty.
Well, yeah,
like, we got a little Hulk Hogan illusion here. You know, Hillenbrand would be the guy who like deliver the low blows when the ref's back is turned,
and rip off his jersey,
pulling out the weightlifting belt, the steel chairs.
Yes, your chance to disparage Shea Hillenbrand doesn't come up very often.
But gotta tonight, take advantage.
Boom, there she be. What else do we have?
All right, here's a question that comes from Lauren Simmons. Is there a player you consider a bellwether indicator for the Jays other than pitchers? Meaning if they have a good game, we're going to win.
They used to have that stat thrown around a lot. And I don't see it so much anymore, but it was always like, when so-and-so gets a hit, this team is 42-2. And I was like, yeah, I don't think that's how it works. I guess it would be if Edwin Encarnacion has a good game, we win. Because generally it means he's hit a home run.
Or Martin. Well, I think the better answer is like, if someone at the bottom of the order has a good game.
Then we need two people at the bottom of the order to have a good game for it to mean anything?
No, just one of them. Because then he's driving in Tulo and Martin, who are always getting on base.
it's
tough, though.
Yeah, it's a tough one. I say when Aaron Sanchez has a good game, we win. But that's only every, 5 days?
Yeah. No, she said no pitchers, though.
Other than pitchers. True. Yeah, I don't know if there's a definitive answer about that. I like your Martin answer. Because Martin does seem to be close and late.
No, I think it is Martin, just almost because like he's hitting behind the big guys, right?
Well, yeah. You're talking about those runs driven in. You're absolutely right. You're talking about Donaldson and Encarnacion. What else do we have?
So this one comes from Dave Gose. What kind of cologne do you all wear?
That's what we call topical. Very nice, sir. I used to be a Stetson man. You remember that theme song?
I wear Gustavo Chassin.
I might play the Stetson man, and if I can find the Chassin, that might be our extra music. but I tend to eschew cologne. And you, sir?
Yeah, same.
You're not a big cologne person?
No, not at all.
So your excuse for John Gibbons getting up in your face would be different.
Maybe he's wearing too much cologne.
Possibly. And our last question is from BK at Brendan Kuhn.
Second last.
No, second last. Yes. It's on a different list. I apologize. Is there merit to not batting Upton and Smoke back-to-back simply due to their strikeout issues, or is that an overstated problem?
It's hard to say. I think that most of the time it doesn't matter as much, because by the time the second guy's striking out, it's the third out.
But
I just think it's having so many strikeouts in general is a problem, but the back-to-back, it doesn't matter as much.
I would be upset if he changed that, because it would deprive me of reusing the same joke over and over again, which is this inning is about to go Upton Smoke.
Boo.
Okay, for real, our last question is from Jared.
No, there's actually two more questions again. You screwed up. Jeez, Greg, come on.
I'm fired.
I'll read this one to you, and then you can read the next one to
me. Okay, fine.
This one is from Jarrett S., JRod19. Is there a particular reason that the Jays didn't give Pompey a look when Pillar went down? They just want to see Upton more.
The Jays hate Dalton Pompey. That's it. They hate him. They regret ever signing him. He's too Canadian. It's obviously not going to work. No. Honestly, I don't think he is hitting well enough in AAA for them to justify calling him up, is my best guess. Josh?
Yeah, and he keeps getting hurt.
Yeah.
I think that's really the answer. He'll be up in September.
I have missed your... Oh, there it is. You have put the question available for me on the internet.
Yeah.
It's going to be exciting while it loads up here. Now that Pat Venditti has moved on, who will replace him in your hearts?
I guess it's Cole. Go ahead.
It's not Pat Venditti, obviously.
No, I can't even call him that anymore. Now he's not Bo Schultz. Which is your answer.
Bo Schultz? I thought Jason Grilli was going to be. So it has to be fringy player?
Yeah, no, Jason Grilli's just too awesome. That doesn't even count. No, it's Bo Schultz for sure. Friend of the podcast.
Yes. You'll have to make him a friend again, and maybe we can talk to him again. Refriend him on Facebook or whatever it is you did to get him to talk to you the first time. I don't think Pat Venditti was ever in my heart that far, to be perfectly honest. So,
Might have been a little tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah, I'm 100% in favor of Bo Schultz coming back whenever he feels like it. Because, hey, why not? Anything but Ryan Tempura. Tempura.
You can't get your shrimp alerts, though.
That's a different thing. For people who don't know what a shrimp alert is, I highly recommend you follow Shrimp Alert on Twitter and enjoy the joy that is the walk-off walk. You have... for us, two do-overs.
Two. The first one came up in today's game, and it was driving me and many others who were watching crazy. So for those of you who are unaware, Joaquin Benoit has a little routine he does where he throws very lightly in the bullpen two innings before he would be potentially going into pitch. Just that's what he does to get his arm loose. On the broadcast, over and over and over again, they kept saying, oh, maybe he's hurt. Maybe he's testing it out. Oh, we don't know. Maybe he's unavailable. Maybe that's why Biagini's up. Maybe it'll be Cecil. You know? And I get it. Showman's not around the team. He might not know. But Buck agreed with him. And he even said specifically, I've never seen him get up and throw early before. He does it every single time.
So you're saying that Buck may not have been paying attention to the baseball game, which he gets paid specifically to pay attention to.
Yeah, I'm sure we're all shocked by that.
Well, I'm sure Tabler would have said absolutely nothing to correct anybody, regardless.
No. It's just so bad, though.
Yeah, you should know that.
Yes.
But we're going to give him a chance to do it over.
Yeah, on tomorrow's game, or there's no game tomorrow, on Friday's game, you should come out and say, hey, the reason Benoit's up and throwing at this time is because he does this every time.
And we shall never speak of it again. Now we're going to go away from the Jays for do-over number two.
Yeah, yes. We went to the coast, to Oakland. Coco Crisp. So Coco Crisp is having a terrible, terrible season. He also has a vesting option for $13 million for next year.
Wait, I have a feeling right now that I see where this is going.
Yeah. So Crisp is, you know, they're not playing him against lefties. They've got these young guys they're giving time to. Crisp comes out and says, I'm extremely hurt the way things are being handled. I'm not calling anyone names, but this is really frustrating, disappointing. You know, and he's just saying, like, he thinks that he should be getting time because he's healthy. Everyone else is getting used off the bench. This is shady. Those are direct quotes. Bob Melvin can't even look me in the eye right now.
I don't think that has much to do with it.
Let me play my way out. If I get hurt, I get hurt. But I'm in good health. I should get the chance to play. That's not how it works.
Nope.
When you play poorly, you don't play.
Well, on top of that, when you have a vesting option, that will affect your playing time in the year that the option is going to vest or the conditions under which it vests. Because the team wanted to have the option to not have it vest. Otherwise, they would have just signed the contract without the option in it, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just so silly. Just keep your mouth shut, Coco.
Yeah, this is the business.
They're not in love with the Coco.
No? Coco Crisp is the tastiest cereal since.
Okay. I took a more modern version, but all right.
And then because we've been not very nice and we've handed out two do-overs, Coco, yeah, keep your mouth shut was a do-over. That's not that hard, is it? We're going to hand out a gold star because a certain pitcher for a certain Mets team did something that in his 19-year major league career he has never done before. Bartolo Big Sexy Cologne took a walk on a 3-2 pitch against Robbie Ray.
It's so good.
So it gets better because for those of you who don't know, Cologne had 282 plate appearances before taking that walk in the major leagues. There was virtually a walk watch every time he got to three balls against an opposing pitcher from the broadcast booth. Here is Cologne's post-game quote. I was surprised, too. The pitcher didn't strike me out because he didn't want to. I couldn't make a swing because of my hand. My left wrist has been bothering me for a long time. So literally, all Robbie Ray had to do was put three balls in the strike zone. And he walked Bartolo Colon, the hardest man to walk in baseball history.
Maybe he was afraid of being embarrassed like James Shields.
That's the other thing Bartolo had never done in his major league career that he did this year. So I think probably we're going to see Bartolo retiring. That's how I feel. Because he's really accomplished everything.
What are you talking about? It's the opposite. He's getting better at age 43.
But he's done it all. He's done, like, up until now, he had those little tick boxes on the bucket list. Home run. No. Oh, I got a home run.
Walk. I don't know why he'd retire. He's got a 3.38 ERA, and he made the All-Star team.
I would like platelets injected or stem cells or whatever he had. I want them injected into everything when I turn 45.
And steroids. He did steroids too.
Well, that was a while ago though. Wasn't that before the was that Biogenesis?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I don't want steroids. But everything else he did that he didn't get caught or get told was illegal, I would like that because he seems to be doing all right. Even though he's about as wide as he is tall. You, Bartolo Colon, deserve a gold star from us.
Yay.
Not redeemable.
That probably sounded really bad over the mic.
It sounded like you were trying to beat it up a little bit. The mic. Okay. We are without an interview this week, so we're a little less involved. Do you have a final thought before we move on?
I have more of a final note. Also, just be the question from Sini Siegel about our favorite Blue Jays team. We can get to that next week and we don't have as many questions. But Berto Osuna the record for the most saves before his 22nd birthday with his 47th. Beat Terry Forster's mark. And he doesn't turn 22 until 2017. So
you're saying there's a chance he's going to build on the record.
Just maybe.
That's pretty cool. I like that. Yeah. I will also throw out a statistic or two for my final thought. This is from High Heat Stats MLB, who you can follow at High Heat Stats. Fun account if you're into that sort of thing. Edwin Encarnacion's last 365 days. 38 doubles. 52 home runs.
Just not including the playoffs.
Yeah, this is regular season. 147 runs batted in. 287, 376, 606 slugging. 82 walks, only 134 strikeouts, 111 runs scored. Pardon me. And he's stolen four bases.
Best part of the whole thing.
Yeah. That 52 home runs.
He's pretty good.
Yeah. Strangely, he was tied with Chris Davis for the most home runs in the last calendar years. And for all of you who are not big baseball fans, no, not that Chris Davis.
Yeah, the Oakland one.
K-H-R-I-S, David. I don't know how that works. I don't even know how you have two guys who are sluggers named Chris Davis in the league at the same time, and they don't spell their name the same way. But, yeah. But now Encarnacion out there with the extra 52nd home run in the last 365 days. So, congratulations to you, EE. You are and remain awesome, parrot and all. And I believe that constitutes a show.
I think so.
Which means that you have been Joshua Hausam at Joshua Hausam, and I have been Greg Wisniewski at Coolhead2010. And this has been Artificial Turf Wars episode number 25. And we'll be back at you next week.
It smells like a victory. June 27th. Let me pitch this to your senses. Chasing.